Good afternoon from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. The University of Alaska will host listening sessions in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage next week as it ramps up its search for a new president. This comes after UA President Pat Pitney announced her retirement plans last month. The university contracted with Witt Keffer, a global executive search firm, to help with the search. During the session, it hopes to get input from the session on what the community wants to see from the next president. In Juneau, the firm will host sessions on Monday. There will be four separate sessions, one for University of Alaska Southeast faculty, one for staff, one for students, and one for community members. The firm will then hold sessions in Fairbanks. A community session will be held on December 9th for the public. Faculty, students, and staff will meet for sessions the following day. Anchorage listening sessions will happen on December 11th for students, faculty, staff, and community members. University students, faculty, and staff will also be able to attend sessions over Zoom. Community members will only have an in-person option. Anyone unable to attend the meeting can also fill out an anonymous survey until December 15th. According to a university press release, recruitment is expected to open in early January, with a president hired between April and May. A 13-member search committee will review and interview candidates. Members of the community include university regents, as well as Alaska City and corporation leaders. Meeting times and locations can be found on the university's website. Teacher and principal turnover rates in Alaska have increased overall, beyond levels preceding the COVID-19 pandemic. That's according to new data from the Institute of Social and Economic Research, or ISER, and it comes as the state continues working on ways to improve teacher retention and recruitment in the state. Dana DeFeo is the director of the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, a clearinghouse for education-related work with ISER. She said at a State Board of Education meeting earlier this week that the teacher and principal turnover rate has generally risen beyond rates seen before the COVID-19 pandemic.
We're seeing just a fairly steady, consistent upward trend. And like I said, we're going to see this pattern no matter how we splice the data.
In 2024, 17% of teachers and 27% of principals left their school districts. While turnover decreased during the pandemic, the new data marks an overall increase since 2013. The research builds on previous work, which studied turnover rates in 2019 and 2020. While principal turnover is generally higher than teacher turnover, DeFeo says the trend depends on the type of community.
When we start to dig into the data, they show that educator turnover is not a monolith. It looks different. It looks different in different places. It looks different in different contexts. And as we develop policies and as we develop programs to interrupt these patterns, it's kind of useful to look at the nuances of these data.
For example, in 2024, principals left schools at higher rates than teachers in communities outside of cities. But the opposite is true for urban schools, where about 30% of teachers left as opposed to 21% of principals. According to a University of Alaska report to the Alaska Legislature, teacher turnover rates statewide sat above the national average between 2012 and 2021. High turnover is associated with negative student outcomes. The state has been working on improving teacher retention since at least 2020. That includes a teacher apprenticeship at the University of Alaska Anchorage and Fairbanks campuses. The University of Alaska Southeast also expects to begin a principal training program next fall. DeFeo said in an interview with KTOO on Thursday that her team plans on surveying teachers in February to see which factors play into their decision to leave.
What we can see pretty clearly is who stays and who goes. We can do that very accurately. What we don't know all the time is why they make those choices.
ISER plans to publish a full report on turnover rates next spring. And the state approved a contract on Monday, agreeing to pay Juneau's new hydroelectric utility $1.3 million to power the controversial Cascade Point Ferry Terminal, a project that has yet to be finalized. That money will pay for a transformer and submarine cable required to connect the Alaska Department of Transportation's proposed ferry terminal to a hydroelectric project that Juneau Hydropower plans to bring online in 2028. According to the contract, the state will pay Juneau Hydropower to purchase the power infrastructure, whether or not the ferry terminal project proceeds. Christopher Goins is the regional director at the department.
If they live up to their part of the bargain, we would be responsible to pay for that.
He says one major reason the state signed the contract now is because the cost would rise if the department decides to electrify later on, after Juneau Hydropower designs a system without this addition. Duff Mitchell is the managing director of Juneau Hydropower. He says the other main reason is because the equipment takes a long time to get here.
We're looking at between 52 weeks to over 3 years, depending on the manufacturer.
He says the transformer wouldn't be used for anything else if the ferry terminal project doesn't get built.
What we can see pretty clearly is who stays and who goes. We can do that very accurately. What we don't know all the time is why they make those choices.
The state extended the public comment period on the proposed Cascade Point Ferry Terminal to January 9th. And local businesses are the heart of a community, but they can also be the most vulnerable during an economic downturn. In Anchorage, Rage City Vintage is closing its doors after a significant drop in sales. As Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor reports, that's a loss for the many people who attend regular events at the Spinard storefront.
Chloe Yu holds up a skirt that she says she plans to wear as a dress.
I would hike it up as a strapless, still use my leather jacket.
She's been digging through the piles at a clothing swap hosted by Rage City Vintage. Yu's been to a bunch of events here. She says she knows she's always welcome. That's something she says she really values as a queer person still discovering aspects of her sexual identity.
During a time where we felt like it was us against the world, coming here, we could always kind of leave behind our worries and responsibilities at the door and just be ourselves in here.
Yu says owners are loud about it being a queer space. There are signs and art on the walls. She appreciates it. Mac Tubbs co-owns Rage City. She says that's the point. They wanted to create a space for all kinds of people who don't always feel safe elsewhere. It's a space for people to find themselves, find friends, figure out how to dress, sometimes how to be a person comfortable in the world.
The goal of any interaction that we have with any person walking in here is to make them feel better than they did when they were outside our doors.
And it's worked. Event attendance is great. Same with social media engagement. People in store, it's all up. The problem is, all that community doesn't add up to dollars. A tight margin was already built into the business model. Then, sales dropped this year by roughly 40% compared to last year. Now, Rage City Vintage is closing. It's not something Tubbs wants to talk about.
In spite of the fact that all we want to do is, like, give love to the community and be a space for people, we get to close instead. That's just hot garbage.
Kevin Berry heads the economics department at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He says a recent report shows Alaska's economy treading water. Nationally, people on the lower end of the economic spectrum are spending less. Berry says that's coupled with the effects of the recent government shutdown and increased prices due to tariffs.
One of the natural responses people have is to start precautionarily saving, to put away a little bit more, not go out quite as much, maybe not buy a vintage t-shirt as frequently.
He says when people pull back, that often really affects small local businesses. That's important for a couple reasons. Small businesses add character to communities, and they serve as a kind of test case, trying out new things, exploring whether there's a demand.
I think that dynamism is really important for an economy like Anchorage, where, you know, part of what we're selling to potential people who would visit or move here is that it's a unique and fun and interesting place to live.
Emma Hill owns Rage City with Tubbs. She says the store is really a community space trying to survive as a retail space.
We have really fun events and we have an amazing community and we get these sweet compliments and comments all the time about how people feel so safe and seen. And because of all of that, I regret nothing.
Hill says for groups that have been marginalized, like queer communities, there's so much value in finding your people to lean on. But she says it doesn't stop there. All the events at Rage City are alcohol-free. Hill stopped drinking nearly a decade ago and struggled to find sober spaces herself. The events are also family-friendly. Kids of all ages regularly perform at open mic nights.
In this space, it's so much more than just a space for queerness. It's a space for vulnerability and where that's not just accepted, it's celebrated.
Like for Chloe Kavanaugh, who is dropping off clothes at the swap. She says it's felt healing to spend time in the store, playing around with her style.
It was really hard to express myself through clothing for a long time, and like even just wearing a baseball hat felt like scary at the time as like a queer kid who hadn't come out.
Hill and Tubbs helped her explore her androgyny, hyping her up to try on things she wouldn't have felt comfortable in before. Hill says that work of building community, supporting each other, it'll go on, even without the store.
It's going to still be community focused, and it's still going to be us showing up for this amazing community that we call home in whatever way that we can.
They're just not quite sure what that looks like yet. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
And a federal lab devoted to renewable energy development for half a century has had the word renewable stripped from its name. The Trump administration, which broadly opposes renewable energy projects, changed the name of the Colorado-based National Renewable Energy Laboratory, or NREL, to the National Laboratory of the Rockies. The Alaska Beacon reports that the U.S. Department of Energy announced the name change on Monday, effective immediately. Assistant Secretary of Energy Audrey Robertson said in a statement that, quote, "We are no longer picking and choosing energy sources," end quote. The statement went on to say the administration's priority is to invest in scientific capabilities that will restore American manufacturing, drive down costs, and help the country meet its soaring energy demands. NREL has a prominent presence in Alaska. In 2020, the agency joined onto a partnership with the Cold Climate Housing Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The Fairbanks facility is one of four NREL centers. Two campuses are in Colorado, and there's an office in Washington, D.C. The name change is a troubling sign to an Alaska organization involved with projects promoting renewable energy and affordability. Bridget Shaughnessy Smith is the communications director for the Alaska Public Research Interest Group. She told The Beacon that it's not yet clear if the name change signals a broad mission shift, but Smith said that, quote, "Any refocus cannot come at the expense of renewable energy or by prioritizing already well-funded fossil fuel industries," end quote. Smith also said remote microgrid communities in Alaska are working with NREL on affordable energy innovations, and that name change must not disrupt that work. And as for the weather, it's currently 39 degrees and raining. We do have a winter storm watch in effect starting Sunday morning at 6 a.m. until midday Monday. The National Weather Service predicts total snow accumulations of 11 to 16 inches could be possible. You're listening to KTOO.